that was installed a couple hundred yards away from the house. And when we got the lights, that was a banner year, because then we could just play ball really till we wore ourselves out. And that was that was a lot of fun. Many a basketball game was played there through junior high and high school. And that's something, when I run into folks that I grew up with, that still becomes a topic of conversation.
For those of you who have not met Gabe Holmstrom, he is a tall individual. Were you a quick sprouter? I mean, did you get tall early on and take advantage of that playing ball?
Yes. So I have not grown in height since I was about 14 years old. So I was always the tallest kid in the class until we got to high school. There was a couple kids that were taller than me, but that. So that always also meant I always played the post position and never really learned how to dribble the basketball. So that, you know, there's pros and cons to how you want to approach that. There's not a lot of 6'4" post men, once you get to high school. And I remember, one of the first games out in high school, and I was assigned to guard a guy. I think it was from Jacksonville. He was 6'8", and that was. Yeah, I was determined not to get dunked on. So at one point, I had to give him a big hug and hold him to the ground and hold him and take the foul so I would not get dunked on.
So you can't dribble, but you learned early on how to hug and, I assume, how to throw an elbow.
Absolutely.
On occasion.
I may have fouled out of a game or five.
Over time.
Yes.
All right. So you and what high school?
So this is Cabot High School.
Yeah. And so as you're going through high school, what starts to form in your head as where you want to go with your life after school?
Well, so my father was a contractor, and what I would credit him for is teaching me all the things that I did not want to spend my life doing. And he was a general contractor. So we would have a job where we would have to go dig ditches. And so I quickly learned that's not what I wanted to do. Plumbing involved crawling underneath houses and being in these tight spaces. That wasn't something I was a real big fan of. Sheetrock work, I didn't really, it took too long. I didn't like to do that. But I really enjoyed working with wood, and I liked the speed of which you saw things progress when working with wood. So when it came time to go to college, I did not go to college right away out of high school. I had some friends that were working in the concrete business, and then again, they were making this great money, for 17, 18 year old guys. And I thought that was going to really be the way to hit a lick. And so I started working for a concrete company where all we did all day long was pour concrete. And I did that for about 6 months. And then, I just remember looking around on a job site one day, and I see a line of concrete trucks backed up. And then I look around at all the other people on the crew, and the 25-year-olds looked 40, and the 45-year-olds looked 60. And then, I'm not the fastest learner, but it dawned on me that I think it's better to be in a classroom where you're not sweating and you're clean and you smell better most of the time than being out here on a job site. So, that the next semester I enrolled in college and started back in my education.
At?
So I went to community college, ASUBB. So I still stayed close to home. I went to school a couple days a week, and then I started, and then I would frame houses the other couple days a week. And so it was a way where I could still work and earn money, but then spend the majority of my time in a classroom.
So then when did you start getting interested in politics?
So, a lot of that goes back to the reading I did. I'd always had a very strong interest in history and in government and the process for which, how things came to be. So the interest in government. I'd always followed the news. But I guess educationally, when I left ASUBB and went to Fayetteville, I remember seeing a sidewalk chalk sign, because that was, I don't even know if they still do sidewalk chalking in the era of text messaging, but that's how you communicated to the masses at the U of A. And so the Young Democrats meeting, you know, next Wednesday. So I remember showing up to the meeting and I said, I'll go check this out. And, this isn't, I can do this. This seems like something I want to get involved in. And, I'd become a political science major at that point. And so it was something, it just evolved. Really one thing led to another. And then, yeah, that's really what led me to then continue with the political science degree and, and then make that a career path.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas.
Basement Books are back. The Friends of Central Arkansas Library's used book sale is March 16th through the 18th on the main library campus. Call 918-3000 or visit cals.org for information about the sale and how you can become a member of the Friends of Central Arkansas Libraries.
You're listening to Radio Cals on KABF 88.3 FM, Little Rock.
You get out of college, you got your degree, and when you start seeing the reality of what a life chasing political science and chasing politics can be?
Well, so the last... So headed into the last year of my senior year, I'd still been working, you know, whether it was in Fayetteville or, I would still do some construction in my spare time. And then, but I didn't want to do that in my last year. I wanted to try to focus on an internship and, really figure out, you know, again, what's the next step? What do we do after college? So I was able to get an internship. I came down to UALR to finish out my degree and got an internship at the Democratic Party, and that was right in the during the 2000 election. So a lot of stuff, a lot of dynamics, a lot of things going on there, both in Arkansas and nationwide. And it was very, very eye-opening experience to participate in that. And again, this is still there's a very technological shift that was occurring that we were on the cusp of, and how data was communicated and how information was transferred. So whereas, you know, we have the technology and a lot of the electronic reporting, I remember spending election night still calling the county clerk's office, asking for early vote numbers and asking for vote totals and updated vote totals and keeping a chart. But then... you know, after the election, so I had one more semester left and I needed to do something. And one of my family friends had told me that Congressman Marion Barry is opening up a branch office in Cabot. And so I was able to get an interview and was able to be an intern in the Cabot office. And that, and you know, I there's obviously, everybody has the moment throughout their career that they won't forget. And go to this Cabot office, and you're going to be the intern there. All right, great. So I'm excited. I'm a college kid. I'm ready to do this. And I get to the office, and literally there is nothing in the office. There's a desk and a phone, and that's it. There's no computer. There's no internet. There's not even a book or a notepad. There's not even a sign. Part of the things that I was tasked with, ironically enough, was, we need to get the office remodeled, and you have to, you know, figure out what is this office going to look like. I think they got their money's worth out of that unpaid internship.
I can imagine.
But it was it was fun. It was exciting. So later on that semester, I graduated on a Saturday, and then the gentleman who was the field representative, which is maybe another word for a glorified driver, he was going back to the news business, and that spot opened up. So, you know, Monday morning after after I graduated, my great plans of taking the great American road trip were dashed because I had an opportunity to go right to work. And so the adventure began.
Off you went, and you stayed with Congressman Berry until he retired, right?
Well, so working for Congressman Berry is kind of like being a made man in the mob. You may not always draw a paycheck from the man, but it wasn't 2 weeks ago that I received a call from somebody that I'd known back when I worked for the congressman that needed help with a Social Security problem. And, I still get those calls from time to time. So, and he will still call and say, hey, do you know who this is? And it's just, but I consider that an honor and a privilege.
You've stopped being paid by his office once he left.
That's correct.
Service, but you've never stopped working for him.
That's correct. But I spent a few years. So I spent a couple years in the district. And then we did the reelection campaign in 2002. And then I went up to Capitol Hill in D.C. and spent a year in D.C. I wanted that experience. That was never going to be a long-term gig for me. But I felt like that was an experience I wanted to have. And I wanted to learn more about the workings of Capitol Hill. And it is a fascinating place.
I bet. And now, after that, you come back and you work on a few other, I think, campaigns and issues. And then come 2007, you go to work for Attorney General Dustin McDaniel.
I do.
And had to fill the shoes of your legendary predecessor.
It was very intimidating having to walk or step into the office that was held for so long by one Matt DeCampbell. That was intimidating.
Well, it happens. However, you got to have a lot more toys in that office than I ever did, so you did very well, I think.
Well, I had ideas, and I had a great intern that helped me implement a lot of those programs, and we were able to track a lot of the communications that were occurring from within that office. And I learned a lot about what the Attorney General does and the essential role that they play as the top legal officer for the state.
And what was your experience? I mean, I know what mine was, but working with the 65, 70 lawyers that are in that office and covering an incredible breadth of topics, it felt to me kind of like I was going through fake law school to become a fake lawyer. Did you have a similar feeling?
It was great. So, having, you work at the Attorney General's office and then, well, are you a lawyer? And then I got to use my favorite line of all time, know what I play one on TV. And, so that I had a lot of fun with that, but no, you're right. You were able to have a deep dive almost every week on a whole variety of topics. And, some of the things that occurred when I was at that office led me to be quoted in People magazine and Rolling Stone magazine. There was a big ticket scalping issue with Hannah Montana. When Hannah Montana was big, when she was Hannah Montana, that was a major issue that we received a lot of traffic on.
That.
And then we had a lot of proceedings related to the West Memphis Three during my time there, and then right. There was a lot of public involvement as it relates to that case, as everybody is well aware of. So, it gave me a very large appreciation for the attorneys that have worked there and some of the work that they've done over the course of several attorneys general they have been there since some of those people have been there since the 70s. I think at some point one of those guys had been there since the 60s. I don't know if he's still there, but it was just interesting to hear those stories and about the different attitudes of the different AGs.
With your time there, you clearly hit peak political input that you wanted, because you soon went over to private sector work.
Well, so the I left the AG's office when my good friend Chad Causey went to run for Congressman Berry's old seat. And so that was, you know, that was a decision of, well, are we, you know, I can't live with myself either way. However this works out, I want to be a part of this. So again, Chad's a longtime friend of mine, and we had a lot of fun on that campaign, learned a lot. And, but it, you know, as everybody knows, we were not successful. And that was not a banner year for Democrats all across the country. So, but yes, after that, I wound up, in the private sector.
And how was that experience compared to having worked, in one way or another through government life for about a decade?
Well, I'm a better person and a better professional as a result of it. I do have to be, if I was candid about it, having the requirement of keeping track of my time in 15-minute increments, that was a struggle. I was somebody that always just, hey, whatever it takes to get the job done, you just keep working and get the job done. And that was how I had been trained and been encouraged to operate throughout, you know, that portion of my career. So, yes, keeping, you know, becoming required to keep track of my time was a educational experience. But like I say, I'm better because of it. And now I definitely look at how I spend my time on a project and how other people that I work with spend their time and able to put a benefit, you know, a cost and a benefit to that.
Good thing you never became a practicing fake lawyer, because your entire life would have been keeping track of your time.
I think that was probably a large deterrent from ever going back to, you know, ever going to law school.
So let's jump ahead to your current position and how did it come about, and what made you decide this was the right place for you?
Well, after the private sector, I'd spent a couple years at the Arkansas House, where it was a fascinating experience, and we had we're able to accomplish a lot of fun things there, under and a lot of good things for the state under the leadership of Speaker Davy Carter. And then when that came to an end, I was at a decision point of, you know, do I go into the government affairs business? Do I go back to the public relations business? I had purchased a home in downtown Little Rock, and this job was open, and I was encouraged to go learn more about it. And I met with the board chair or board president and the vice president, and had a good conversation. And the more I thought about it, this really seemed like something that would hit on a lot of things that I was interested in. It would be, helping the community, public service in a way, still being involved with public policy, working with different interests for a common goal, even though those interests may not agree on the best path on how to get there. But yeah, it was the right opportunity that came along at the right time, and I'm grateful that happened.
Let me ask you the question I'm sure you're asked the most these days. What exactly does the Downtown Partnership do?
So that is a great question, Matt.
Thank you. I came up with it all by myself.
So we, on any given day, I'm doing something different than I did the day before, and I'm doing something different than I will be doing tomorrow.
That was a segment of an interview with Gabe Holmstrom, Executive Director of Downtown Little Rock Partnership. To hear this and other primary sources interviews in their entirety, visit cals.org/podcasts. Want to know what's happening in the world of CALS? The new programming guide will help you navigate the variety of youth and adult programs, book clubs, movies, and more across CALS's 14 branches, the Ron Robinson Theater, the Butler Center, and River Market Books and Gifts. Look for the programming guide in a branch near you or visit cals.org.
Radio Cals is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.
Did you have a similar feeling?
It was great. So, you work at the Attorney General's office, and then, well, are you a lawyer? And then I got to use my favorite line of all time, know what I play one on TV. And so I had a lot of fun with that. But no, you're right. You were able to get have a deep dive almost every week on a whole variety of topics. And, you know, some of the things that that occurred when I was at that office led me to be quoted in People magazine and Rolling Stone magazine. There was a big... ticket scalping issue with Hannah Montana. When Hannah Montana was big, when she was Hannah Montana, that was a major issue that we received a lot of traffic on.
That.
And then we had a lot of proceedings related to the West Memphis Three during my time there. And then there was a lot of public involvement as it relates to that case, as everybody is well aware of. So it. Yeah, it gave me a very large appreciation for, you know, the attorneys that have worked there and some of the work that they've done over the course of several attorneys general that they have been there since some of those people have been there since the 70s. I think at some point one of those guys had been there since the 60s. I don't know if he's still there, but. You know, it was just interesting to hear those stories and about the different attitudes of the different AGs.
With your time there, you clearly hit peak political input that you wanted because you soon went over to private sector work.
Well, so the I left the AG's office when my good friend Chad Causey went to run for Congressman Berry's old seat, and so that was a decision of I can't live with myself either way. However this works out, I want to be a part of this. So again, Chad's a longtime friend of mine, and we had a lot of fun on that campaign, learned a lot, but as everybody knows, we were not successful, and that was not a banner year for Democrats all across the country. So, but yes, after that, I wound up in the private sector.
And how was that experience compared to having worked in one way or another through government life for about a decade?
Well, I am a better person and a better professional as a result of it. I do have to be, if I was candid about it, having the requirement of keeping track of my time in 15-minute increments, that was a struggle. I was somebody that before that always just, hey, whatever it takes to get the job done, you just keep working and get the job done. And that was how I had been trained and been encouraged to operate throughout that portion of my career. So yes, keeping, you know, becoming required to keep track of my time was a educational experience, but like I say, I'm better because of it. And now I definitely look at how I spend my time on a project and how other people that I work with spend their time and able to put a benefit, a cost and a benefit to that.
Good thing you never became a practicing fake lawyer, because your entire life would have been keeping track of your time.
I think that was probably a large deterrent from ever going back to ever going to law school.
So let's jump ahead to your current position and how did it come about, and what made you decide this was the right place for you?
Well, after the private sector, I'd spent a couple years at the Arkansas House, where it was a fascinating experience, and we had were able to accomplish a lot of fun things there, and a lot of good things for the state under the leadership of Speaker Davy Carter. And then when that came to an end, I was at a decision point of, do I go into the government affairs business? Do I go back to the public relations business? I had purchased a home in downtown Little Rock, and this job was open, and I was encouraged to go learn more about it. And I met with the board chair or board president, and the vice president, and had a good conversation. And the more I thought about it, this really seemed like something that would hit on a lot of things that I was interested in. It would be, helping the community, public service in a way, still being involved with public policy, working with different interests for a common goal, even though those interests may not agree on the best path on how to get there. It was the right opportunity that came along at the right time, and I'm grateful that happened.
Let me ask you the question I'm sure you're asked the most these days. What exactly does the Downtown Partnership do?
So that is a great question, Matt.
Thank you. I came up with it all by myself.
So we, on any given day, I'm doing something different than I did the day before, and I'm doing something different than I will be doing tomorrow.
That was a segment of an interview with Gabe Holmstrom, Executive Director of Downtown Little Rock Partnership. To hear this and other primary sources interviews in their entirety, visit cals.org/podcasts. Want to know what's happening in the world of CALS? The new programming guide will help you navigate the variety of youth and adult programs, book clubs, movies, and more across CALS's 14 branches, the Ron Robinson Theater, the Butler Center, and River Market Books and Gifts. Look for the programming guide in a branch near you or visit cals.org.
Radio CALS is a production of the Central Arkansas Library System and its Arkansas History Department, the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies. For more information, please visit cals.org and butlercenter.org. Our producer is Glenn Whaley, and our production manager is Brett Ratliff. Voices by Jasmine Jobe and John Miller. Engineering and editing by Brett Ratliff, Michael Stotts, and Anna Lancaster. Our executive producers are Leanne Blackwell-Hoskin and David Strickland. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next Wednesday at 6 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 Little Rock.